And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 837, the 30th and final team on your team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. And what better, I guess, team to discuss than at the 30th team is the two-time defending World Series champion, Los Angeles Dodgers, a team that's basically its own fantasy team in a nutshell. In order to help me break them down once again, as a friend of mine, a friend of yours, he's behind the scenes is what I always say at Pitcher List, but people don't understand what that means because he does a lot. He's vice president of operations, according to the time we record this show. You can find him on Twitter, which he's not on very often because he's busy behind the scenes, at Miles Nelson PL. Miles Nelson, how you doing, my friend?
I am doing fantastic. I'm so happy to be here. Third year now doing this with you, something I look forward to every year. Always love spending time with you, Bubba, and I'm honored to be, 837 episodes is a lot of anything. So for me to be three of those 837, I'm honored.
I appreciate it. Like I said, throughout this whole, four doing these, it's pretty sweet to be able to pull it off and find 30 people every year because it's just everyone's busy. Everyone has life. It's crazy. So, and not everybody wants to talk about their teams, not all their teams at least. So it's really good stuff. But before we get talking about the Dodgers, the team I love to talk about more than anything in the world.
I'm sure you do.
Plug Pitcher List, who's always coming up with stuff. And we were talking before the show, they dropped a new product's not the right word, but something new to use with Pitcher List.
Yeah. I mean, product is definitely a fair word because this, unlike when you think of Pitcher List, I think most people tend to think of things that are article or podcast or video based, the list and all of these other great pieces of content that you can sort of digest as an individual and take with you to your drafts. So like, hey, this is going to help me inform me of what I'm, how I'm going to be looking at things. Today we dropped a live draft assistant. So this is quite literally a tool that you can have open with you as you're drafting, whether it is, an online draft, a slow draft, an in-person auction, a salary cap draft, whatever we're calling those these days, anything along those lines that, as you're in the moment trying to make decisions on how to attack your draft, that is what our live draft assistant does. It is powered by our PLV projections, which were obviously created by both Kyle Bland and Nick Pollock. There's a lot of, really, really great information in here. You can use it both in the moment as you're drafting. You can also use it to prepare for a draft as we're able to provide, average auction values, projections. Basically, if you're doing a fantasy baseball draft in the next month and a half and you're not using a live draft assistant, definitely our live draft assistant, you're going to be behind compared to the people you're playing against. And so our live draft assistant is now available for PL Pro members, which you can be a member of either monthly or annually. And there is a discount on our website, a coupon code that you can use to sign up with for PL Pro to get access to our live draft assistant for this upcoming draft season. So huge news at Pitcher List. It's something that has been honestly in the works for years now. We've been talking about this for at least 4 years. We built some version of this in the past couple of years, but this year we really have something that is a full-on product that you can use as you are drafting. So a huge strides from Pitcher List, from everyone on the team. Shout out to Chris Weber, our product manager, obviously Nick Pollock and Kyle Bland, who, like I've mentioned before the show, Nick had the vision, Kyle's got the projections, the brains of the operation. So it's really fantastic to see. And as you mentioned, doing operations, doing stuff behind the scenes, it is really fantastic when the things that we're doing behind the scenes that we can't talk about, that we can't, hey, we've got this coming, that coming, these things actually come to fruition and seeing everyone's hard work pay off. So definitely check it out. You'll find it if you just go to pitcherlist.com. You'll find the live draft assistant right there on the front page and can learn more about it.
Yep, go check them out. I've always been a big fan. Obviously I used to do stuff at Pitcher List. My life got changed as well, it happens, but always support them. Love the crew, love, heck, if you guys listen to my 30 previews, I think they probably have close to a third of them between their personalities over there. Really good people. They got a couple new podcasts this year they've added to the repertoire, I guess we'll say, mm-hmm. and more folks that it's fun, at least for my doing this for over 10 years now, like watching some of these. We were talking before the show, like, you know, Jake Crumpler, I knew like when he just barely started, like a youngin, still a youngin, but he was youngin, and now watching where he's coming, so on and so forth. There's so much of that with Pitcherless. So it's great to see. It's cool to see Nick's visions all the time. He's always excited about things. But one cool thing that Pitcherless does every year is, and Nick's made a point to this, and it's always obviously helps with guys like you and others, is they always want to like add one big new thing each year. It's always something. Mm-hmm. And so I might be speaking out of school. This feels like that one for this year. Like a couple of years back, it was the PLV projections and so on and mm-hmm. so forth. And there's always something, and they're always basically trying to make it an even better fantasy game for you. Cause something Miles said there was a lot of people have some sort of draft software, basically is what it comes down to. And if you walk into a room, like Miles said, someone's using one. So yep. You better like have something with you too. Like, you don't have to, like, trust me, you know, you can be a caveman like me and do stuff, but even I have something that tracks what I'm doing now. Like, mm-hmm. so it exists and it's important. And I am a believer in the projections over there. I haven't had Kyle on this year cause I've been doing previews. He will be coming on. He comes on once a year. We talk about the year before, the year after. And it's pretty cool stuff. Cause as I've called him forever, big brained Kyle Bland is it's just ridiculous. Like, people don't get to see the Discord, but it's no joke when he says, yeah, people just throw ideas in there and I come up with stuff. And he comes up with it quickly is the scary part. So, really good stuff over there. Can't say I can't say enough how much I support what they got going on at pitcherless.com. So check that out. All right, let's do it. This will be the longest, 45 minutes to an hour of my life, but we will go through it once again.
You stalled long enough, but you have to talk about, as you called them, the back-to-back world champion Los Angeles Dodgers.
I am at least a man of integrity. I will be honest. I think we've talked about this before. It's hard for me to hate the Dodgers now compared to when I grew up, when rivalries existed, because it's just different now. It's just so different. The players, the way players change teams all the time. You can't build it as much. And for those watching on video, Miles wearing a wonderful hat for me to stare at for this entire show. It's a World Series hat, so yeah, it's got that going as well. But before we start talking players, Miles, you're the only team that gets to actually say it was a great season. How did you think 2025 went for the Los Angeles Dodgers? I ask every team how they thought the season went. You're the only one that gets to lift the
chair. Yeah, I'll be honest. This year season was a season of many different seasons for the Dodgers. And I say that because there was a period of time when we were rolling out lineups full of people no one had heard of or no one was expecting to be, we had Michael Conforto batting fourth, which before the season started, you and I both said, hey, this is someone to keep an eye on as a potential bounce back candidate. He never bounced back at any point. He had like 1 week, I think, in August where he did well, and that was about it. But he was batting fourth. We had games where Alex Freeland was starting at third, Miguel Rojas was starting at second, Alex Call was starting in the outfield. None of these guys are bad players, and actually, they're all major leaguers. But when you looked at the season, at the team before the season and saw the lineup, there was never a world in which we're going to say, yeah, this was like two good batters at the top and then a whole bunch of like, I don't know. And we went through that a lot. We had long stretches of time where like Ben Kasperius was starting every fifth day. Tanner Scott forgot how to pitch last year. It just was one of those seasons where like everything seemed to go wrong. And then it felt like in the playoffs, we got all of that. I don't want to call it karma because I don't think anyone's going to look at the Dodger team and say, oh yeah, no, they need the cosmic karma. But you look at how that series ended with the Phillies. You look at, and I don't, I hope Orion Kerkering has a fantastic career ahead of him, a long, fruitful career where he can forget that what happened in Game 5 last year ever happened. You look at the series that we had with the Blue Jays and just how, that's an all-time series. Right. I mean, it just in terms of going back and forth, some of the dramatics of that series, like I don't really know still how I feel about 2025 other than my heart hurts in the best way because it was put through a lot. And it was a great season at the end of it all. So fantastic season. Dodgers, please don't ever do that again. Please just win 162 games and sweep everyone in the playoffs and just make this a lot easier for us. And then, you know, give the owners all the fuel they need to fuel. Yeah, that's the other problem now, looking at the Dodgers, is what does it mean for 2027? So I don't do well. That's all I care about. Let's do well, and we'll worry about the future in the future.
Yeah, because according to, you know, half of Twitter, it's your guys' fault. So you should just remember that, which it's not your guys' fault, but that's just the reality of the situation.
Hey, if Manny Machado's defending the way that we're building a team, then clearly we've got the players' buy-in. So it'll be interesting how everyone's going to point. Both sides, I think, are going to point to the Dodgers, and you're going to hear a lot about it in 2027. But
it'll be exciting.
Let's just win another one before all that happens.
Yeah, let's just win our third in a row. And it's kind of fitting that I think about it. I think my first preview was the Jays, and you are the last one. So it's a beautiful way to offset things.
There you go.
All right, let's get to it. We'll start at the top. This one probably doesn't need a whole lot of explanation, but Shohei Ohtani, the unicorn, absolute monster. What a downer, though. You know, after going 50-50, he only hits 55 home runs and steals 20 bases. Like, what are we doing here? I don't have a whole lot here. He's the number one overall pick right now. He's amazing. As long as he's healthy, he's great. So anything on Shohei?
No, just there was a report this morning from Katie Wu, beat reporter for the Dodgers, that Dave Roberts confirmed Ohtani will hit leadoff again this year. Not that that was ever in doubt, but we have confirmation he will continue to hit leadoff. So once again, a ton of runs, more stolen bases than Aaron Judge. Probably a little less, a little worse of a batting average than Judge. Probably about the same amount of power. Probably a little fewer RBI. So, you know, really the only question that anyone has to ask themselves when it comes to the 1-1 is, do you want the five category excellence of Ohtani, or do you want a slightly better batting average and maybe a little more RBI and a little fewer runs when it comes to Judge versus Ohtani? I'm going Ohtani. I think most people should, but that's the only question.
Yeah, I've been going Ohtani too, but I think it's a fair question. Like, I like Judge a ton as well. Like, I understand if people want to go Judge's route, if you don't want the utility for some reason or something, but it's really picking at straws. And depending on your format, you can maybe use him as a pitcher as well, which we will talk about in the pitching department of this later on. All right, Mookie Betts, you mentioned in that news drop, Dave Roberts said Betts will likely hit third for the team coming into the season, which similar to years past. Mookie's getting older. Like we all do, he's made 33, 20 homers, 8 steals last year, 258. We know he had the, you know, viral disease or whatever to start the season, lost a ton of weight. ADP's around 55-ish over the last 7 days in OCs. What are your thoughts on Betts? Because it's one of those where this is the cheapest he's been in a long time. But, like, do we just kind of throw out the fact he was hurt and think he comes back to who he was, or is age catching up?
I mean, it's probably a little bit of both, right? And I think – ultimately, it is more so the illness and injuries that he suffered last season as opposed to age catching up. He lost 15 to 20 pounds, even upwards of 25 pounds, depending on which report you read at the start of the season last year due to that viral illness. And that's a lot of weight to lose. That's a lot of strength that is sapped. He admitted himself, it took him months to feel like himself after that. And I think what we saw was the second half Mookie Betts was the Mookie that we should expect moving forward, because the difference between the two was stark, you know, and I think a lot of that had to do with the, you know, losing all of that weight. Just some quick numbers, basic numbers, but still in the first half of the season, he had a slugging percentage of .381 and an OPS of .696. In the second half, that was .442. And .784 respectively. So again, right, that is still a step back from the Mookie Betts that we expected from years past. I think playing shortstop every day is a little bit harder on him. And I think, I don't know what to make of the fact that he was popping up every single time he came to the plate in the World Series. I do think there is a little bit of age-related regression from Mookie Betts, but he's not the guy that, if you look at his full stat line from last year, he's certainly not the guy from the first half of last year. And so I think this is fantastic value. At the same time, shortstop is so deep. Shortstop is the deepest position, I think, in fantasy baseball this season. And so I don't know what you do about Mookie, because you're not moving him ahead of any of the six guys ahead of him, right? So, you know, I don't know. I think he's maybe appropriately valued based on positional scarcity.
Yeah, I agree. He's appropriately valued. It's just comes down to, do you think, like you basically said it, is do you characterize the illness and injuries and think he improves a bit? I don't think he'll ever be the stud we once saw with Mookie Betts, but you're not paying for that stud anymore. It's like, do you take the elder Betts or the youth of Abrams? Because that's who the kind of going around each other. Mm-hmm. That's the question you have in a draft room. I usually lean Abrams just because for the youth aspect and seeing where it goes. But right. I've never really been a Betts guy in recent years either. It's just, I think he's still going to be very good. He'll be a very good real life player for that team. I hate the fact they keep moving him around. Like you said, moving him to short, how did that go? Lots of questions there, but he's appropriately priced, like you said. And that's just the way of the world. And someone will take him in your draft.
Yeah. He's reliability and steadiness, much in the same way I think another player we're about to talk about is, in that you know what you're going to get. It's not going to be sexy, but you're also not going to have to worry about it at any point in the season. And, you know, how you feel about that as a drafter is how you feel about it. I want a little bit of reliability throughout my lineup. Mookie is not necessarily someone I'm targeting everywhere, but he is someone where if I know I've taken some risks early, you know, I'd be enticed to stabilize my lineup a bit with Mookie.
Yep, it's a boring is beautiful plug and play, just like Freddie Freeman, as you mentioned. And this is another one. He's going to be 36. Like, his time is slowly going to be coming to an end here. But another 20-plus home runs. There's only six steals. He obviously had those ankle injuries and other injuries. But hit 295 again. Again, it's just a boring is beautiful profile. His ADP is down to 70-ish over the last 7 days, which is, again, low for Freddie Freeman standards, but probably appropriately priced. So what are your thoughts on Freddie? He's a guy that I never drafted. I actually have a couple shares of this year.
I was going to say, I think him being a second rounder in years past was, again, going back to, like, boring is beautiful, especially at the top of the draft when you want predictability. But he also never had that same explosive upside of the other guys around him in those first 30 picks or so, which is where he's been going in years past. Going around pick 70 is much more palatable in terms of having someone that you can rely on, know exactly what they're going to do. And first base is different from shortstop, where with shortstop, if I don't take Mookie, I still have plenty of options. I'm not going to sit here and say first base, there's not other options. But when you look at the players going after Freeman, Josh Naylor's going around where Freddie's going. Kind of a similar situation to Abrams. Do you want steals? Then you want Naylor. And then you have guys like Pasquantino, Soderstrom, Bush, Yandy Diaz going, you know, some 60 picks later. Diaz, anyway, the rest of them are going between 80 and 100. And the question's a little bit more, I'm less certain of what I'm going to get. With at least with Soderstrom and Bush. With Pasquantino, I'm not certain that he's going to be better than Freeman. He's probably going to be very similar to Freeman. But if I squint, I can see some upside with Pasquantino. Whereas if I squint at Freddie Freeman, I actually see a guy who maybe misses time, right? And so that's the flip side there. That's the risk-reward profile there. So I think with Freeman, he's someone that I am more interested. Like if I was looking at Freeman and Betts, I'm probably picking Freeman around later than I'm picking Betts. And I'm probably happier with that stability at first base. And I'd rather take a shot on upside at shortstop. So I'm 100% with you. I think Freeman is pretty great value for where he is. I think you know exactly what you're going to get from him. Very predictable at this point.
Yeah, because it comes down to the steals, like you said, with Naylor. But otherwise, Freddie's going to hit for average. He's going to get you the home runs. In that lineup, he's going to drive in plenty. Like, it's a really good profile. And I love Vinny P, but he's not going to steal any bases, and his average will be slightly lower. That's like, unless he's young enough to hit that next level, which is possible. But that's because we had that discussion, me and Ryan, on a recent show, and between those two. And I'm a big Vinny fan, but there's a reason I think he's going slightly behind Freddie Freeman. Like, could he jump him? Sure. But you know what you're going to get with Freddie Freeman.
It's a little bit of that post-hype sleeper syndrome where I think we've kind of, a couple of years ago, we were all big dreamers on big Pasquatch. And now it's just kind of more like, it feels like he's settled into who he is, but players make, you know, progress isn't linear and players make adjustments year in and year out. And this could be the year that Vinny P unlocks some more power or, you know, unlocks the ability to hit for a bit of a higher average like that. There's some of that potential that isn't there with Freddie anymore. So that's just, I'm 100% with you. I just think it just comes down to preference once again.
All right, your shiny new toy, well, one of them, because it's the Dodgers, they have multiple every offseason. Eventually, you have nowhere else to go. But right now, they keep finding spots for all these free agents, and that is Kyle Tucker, who, when healthy, is a 30-30 machine. He's one of the top, you know, outfielders in all of fantasy baseball. He'll be 29 this year, played 136 games, played hurt a lot last year, like the previous season, but still went 22-25. It wasn't a bad season, but it was down from what you draft him at. And right now, his OCADP is around 12.5-13 over the last 7 days. What are your thoughts on Kyle Tucker joining this team? He should be hitting between Ohtani and Betts, most likely.
Yeah, that's definitely the most likely place for him in the lineup. Roberts did say he's still figuring out who's going to hit second and fourth. I think we can all understand that that means Tucker and Freeman. And I think we can all read between the lines and understand that that means Tucker is almost certainly batting second and Freeman batting fourth. I don't think you make a change in your top three that has been a solidified top three for the past two seasons now just to swap their order. I think you make that change because you have a new hitter who makes more sense in the two hole in Kyle Tucker. So I think he's going to bat second. I think that means he is going to have a ton of run production, both runs scored and RBI. He will probably have more runs scored than RBI just because Ohtani hit so many home runs that Tucker is going to find himself with empty bases. But I think we're going to see 30 home runs, 20 to 30 stolen bases and 190 at a minimum combined runs in RBI, and a good batting average. So I think what you're going to see with Kyle Tucker is five category excellence. You know, I think right now he's being drafted as the seventh outfielder off the board. If I know how to count on NFBC, and I don't know how you feel about Jackson Chourio or Fernando Tatis Jr. But I don't see any reason why Tucker isn't a first round pick, in my opinion.
I think he's a first round pick. Tatis is a second rounder for me just because he has to accumulate to get those stats. We saw Tucker go 22-25 and 130 games, which is still pretty nice. Chourio, I'm always a believer. He's so young that I've said for at least a year or two now that if there's ever the next Ronald Acuna, it's him. He just asked, when will he get there? So I understand if people want to go that road over Tucker. But with Tucker, like, you know what you're getting. And now he's on the best team he's ever been on. So I like it a lot. It just comes to health. He's had a lot of weird, fluky injuries. It's not like it's soft tissue as much as broken hands and goofy stuff like that. So we'll see where it goes there.
With the Dodgers luck the last couple of years, that'll continue. Yes. With the injury stuff anyway, that'll continue and we'll find ourselves in another situation where some AAA guy I've never heard of is going to be our right fielder again. You know,
Enrique Hernandez will be playing right.
Well, field. Yeah, it'll. Yeah.
4 weeks.
Yeah. And I'm fine with that. I want to be clear. Enrique Hernandez could play every day.
He's a lifetime Dodger. That's why everyone, it made me laugh because I draft right out the gate like a dummy. And everyone was like, he's a free agent. I'm like, he's signing with the Dodgers. He's signing. Like, this happens every offseason. He will be back for whatever offer they give him and he's gonna go back to LA and be just fine. That's until he wants to retire, he will be a Dodger, just like Max Muncy was always going to be a Dodger. Like, there's just certain guys that's not gonna, like, that just makes me laugh. All right, let's go behind the plate here. Will Smith, who last year actually battled some injuries for the first time really in his career, 110 games, still not bad, but we saw him at 296, was way above what we've seen in recent years, and there's some outlying metrics that might support that. But unlike other teams where the elite catchers go off the board, they get to DH. I think we talked about a guy earlier that will prevent that from happening in LA. Yeah. So that's the only downside, really, to Smith. That's why I usually just fade him out of the elite tier of catchers. But his ADP is about 105, 106 right now. What are your thoughts on Will Smith? Again, great hitter, but coming off a really great year also.
Yeah. Real quick on last season, the batting average, no one believes it's real. There's not a single projection system out there, including ours, that is going to project him for anything different than what he's done in years past. You know, the power and run production numbers, when you look at it on paper, it looks a little lower than in years past, but he did, as you pointed out, miss some time due to injury. He played about 20 fewer games than you would expect. DH is blocked, so he's never going to get playing time there. You might hear some other Dodger fans say, well, he played third base in the minors and Max Muncy's not who he used to be. And so maybe he's going to play third unless they carry a third catcher on the roster. I don't think they're going to move Will Smith out from behind the dish at all, just because of the risk that you run of having two catchers on the field. You know, you're only two catchers on the field, I should say. So I don't expect Will Smith's playing time to change. And because of that, I don't expect he's going to be anything other than a 20 home run, 150 runs in RBI combined, 260 hitter, which is exactly who he's been every single season. And normally that meant he was in those elite catcher tiers in that top five. And so there was a reason to fade him. He is not being drafted that way anymore. He is now the ninth catcher off the board. His ADP, I don't have previous years up in front of me, but I know from just off the top of my head that he was usually catcher five off the board. Mm-hmm. Now I don't feel like I have to fade him, because now I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, am I going to chase these young players that don't have much of a pedigree in Rice, Langoliers, Goodman, Ramirez, Baldwin? I mean, that's 3 through 7 at catcher. You're taking some risk in each of those guys. Or do I go my strategy of drafting a catcher that slips a little bit behind what I think he should? And I think Will Smith is now the guy I'm going to be targeting everywhere in drafts, because I feel like I will probably be able to get what I would have gotten at pick 60 or 70 in years past. I'm getting a pick 100.
And that's the funny part for me, is I've always been anti-Will Smith. Ryan's always been huge Will Smith. My biggest argument was playing time with the draft cost, as you just mentioned. And this is the first year where Ryan laughs, because I'm like, I could at least understand taking Will Smith now. Like, he's not off my board, is what I'm trying to say, where he was in years past because of that. Because I do agree, he's going to, if he plays his 130 games, like, he's going to hit you 20-plus homers and hit you 260 or whatever and be just fine. But, you don't have to pay for it this year, which is quite nice. There's no Dodgers tax on this one.
Yeah.
I will say,
just on that note, the difference is between this year and years past is the opportunity cost. Before, you weren't, you know, worried about losing out on, hey, this guy, I could be getting someone who could hit 60 home runs. Okay, Cal Raleigh's not doing that again. But there's more excitement now at the catcher position. And so it can be very easy to get swept up in wanting a shot at the next guy who could be the number one catcher in fantasy at the end of the season. And Will Smith is not going to do that. Just right off the, like, there's no world in which Will Smith finishes even as a top three catcher in fantasy this season. But that's not why you're drafting him there at pick, you know, at catcher 9 off the board. You're drafting him because you can guarantee he's not going to be outside of the top 10 at catcher. And there are very few of those guys available in the first 100 picks that I can sit here and say, I could tell you right now, I know he will finish in the top 10 at catcher. Will Smith is one of those guys.
And this is what makes the Dodgers, many reasons why it makes the Dodgers so good and so scary, is it's just so many stat lines you can pretty much write down. So You already know by the end of the year, well, yeah, we're going to score this many runs pretty much. We're going to hit this many home runs. And it makes, you know, your success rate pretty good in fantasy and in real life, knowing you have these guys. And to twist that into fantasy now is being able to draft. Like, we literally talked about Shohei, who's a monster. Mookie, even if he falls back, he's got a great floor. Tucker's great. Freeman, Smith, like Freeman and Smith especially, you can pretty much just write their stat line in right now, and you're going to be pretty close to what happens. Like, and that's really reassuring, especially with a top, let's just say 105, top 100 pick, to be able to do that. That's pretty nice, all things said and done.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, let's talk about your third baseman, Maximus Muncy. It has declined a bit. I understand where they're probably saying things, but it's a combination of being hurt and he's not hitting lefties like he once was, I guess, but the power is still ridiculous. The bifocal story is, I respect it. I started wearing glasses like a year and a half ago. Life changer. And Max Muncy's ADP is like 257. It's cheap. Again, playing time, injury history. I'm not saying he's a must draft, but where are you at on Max Muncy? I know he's got a soft spot in your Dodgers fans' hearts, especially. I even saw, it was a tweet, but I think it came from an interview and an article about how his kids are associated with the dog, all the reasons he came back. Like, okay, that's like, even if you hate the Dodgers, you got to respect that type stuff. So what's your thoughts on Max Muncy?
Obviously, as a Dodger fan, I love Max Muncy. To the point on those glasses, man, let me tell you. So there's a meme of Max Muncy that goes around. I see it most often on Reddit, but I'm sure it's on Twitter and stuff, just about Muncy sneering at a pitch that's, oh, it's 0.16 centimeters off the plate. Like, you fool. Like, how could you throw something you think is a, you know, whatever. And when he, once he put on those glasses, it like made that meme come to life even more. And then somehow he looks even more intimidating in the batter's box. Now I'm not a pitcher, but I'm just, if I'm looking across and I see Max Muncy already with that perfect batter's eye with those glasses on, I'm just like, man, like I gotta throw a strike. Cause if I don't, he's not going to swing. And then he's going to walk. And then I'm just going to be sitting here feeling like an idiot for walking Max Muncy. Like, you know, it just, I got to think there's an intimidation factor there. With that said, from a fantasy perspective, unless you play in an OBP league or some other league where, you know, points or some other format where like that part of it comes into it, I just don't really see the appeal to rostering Max Muncy. There's certain formats. If you're in a deep enough league, you know, a good corner infielder, if you have deep roster, like deep benches and you feel comfortable with platooning, or you just need someone that like, yeah, I'm not going to spend a lot of draft capital on him, but I can plug him in while I wait and see if my, you know, I don't even know who you might pick as a high upside third baseman, you know, Noel V. Marte, like, hey, you know, maybe we get something out of him. I just need someone to stick at third base. And Max Muncy's that guy. Like, it just, you're getting no batting average. You're not getting any stolen bases. Not that you're going to get them from third base that much anyway, but you're also getting the headache of playing time. You're getting the headache of even if he does play against a lefty, do you want him in your lineup that there? And yeah, he hit 19 home runs in 100 games last year, but he also only played 100 games last year. He only played 73 games the season before. More and more we're hearing murmurs of platoons, of days off. And again, this is a Dodgers lineup that does not have anywhere to store a Max Muncy that needs a day off, but we want his bat in the lineup. There's not, you know, I guess we could put him at first, but then that means you're taking Freddie out of the lineup. You're not putting him at DH. We're not putting him at second base anymore. Those days are long gone. So it's just like, you're just getting a guy who is a headache to roster and is good, but not great during those times that he's on the field.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. It's a good story. Like I used him as a, off the waiver wire last year from time to time. Mm-hmm. That's who he's become. Like you said, you don't really have to draft Max Muncy like you used to back in the day, but there will be stretches where you're like, okay, I get it with him. It's going to be great. And I think he's more of a team guy, and I've even admitted in the past, like, you know, Bumgarner deserved it. So
one thing I will note on Muncy, a lot of people, you'll hear people like I just did mention, yeah, if you're in an OBP league, you know, oh, it's this or that. He in a regular 5x5 league is like, I don't know, the 20th ranked third baseman by our projection system, something along those lines. In OBP leagues, and this is accounting for playing time. So I'm kind of also assuming that, let's say, he plays the same amount of time as roughly everyone else. So again, that's not going to happen. But just when he plays, we have him as a top 30 hitter, period, overall, all positions. So again, that's not going to happen because he's not going to play every day. But that's the stark difference between Max Muncy in a non-OBP league and Max Muncy in an OBP league. He is still very much a top third base option. I think in that situation makes managing the platoon worth it, because he is someone who is elite at the position and an elite hitter overall when he's on the field.
Yep, totally agree. All right, let's go to Teoscar Hernandez, another getting older player, 33. Found out, actually this came out, I think, Wednesday, that he's been playing hurt last year, which kind of makes sense now. You know, hit 247, still hit his 25 homers, stole five bags after stealing 12 in 2024. You're probably thinking, okay, maybe he'll run a little more, but more so like the average was just not Teoscar standards, and the power was there, but he just felt off all season watching him. And like, I'm a big fan for him in fantasy, but like, one of the running jokes Ryan, myself, and others make is, you know, love or hate the NFBC, we love them, but is the early drafters are pretty sharp, is what we like to say, because like, why else would you be drafting early? That just doesn't make sense. His ADP at 135 over the last 7 days is pretty much where it was last season. So like, on a quote unquote down season, my point is he didn't fall people are still like, okay, we still like Teoscar. Should we, Miles, still like Teoscar?
Yeah, I think we should. I think he is a very streaky hitter. He's always been a very streaky hitter. But if you look at his numbers year in and year out, he is generally a very good hitter. And we've projected him. We've projected him in a way where I think where he's being drafted might be a little low. If he meets the projections that you know, our PLV powered projections have for him. We have him as a much better hitter than where he's currently being drafted. Now, you know, obviously power projections don't take into account was hurt last year. So that means he could even be better than what we're projecting him as, because, you know, we had to take into account the actual stats that were there last year. You know, I know a lot of our stuff is based on quality of at bat, quality of pitch, quality of swing. And so those things, if he's playing hurt, are going to look worse in his metrics than, you know, if he was playing healthy. So I think we're going to get a bounce back season. Much in the same way Will Smith's batting average was a fluke. I think it's pretty easy to point at Teoscar Hernandez's underlying metrics. His batting average on balls in play was below 300 for the first time since 2019. He is almost always a 330 to 340 BABIP guy. And his batted ball profile did not change dramatically last year compared to what he has always been. And so there's not something you can point to and say, well, he's hitting more fly balls, he's popping the ball up more. Like, these are things that are going to lead to a worse, you know, batting average on balls in play. That's not the case. And he's been hitting it as hard as he always has. So if I don't have to watch him and Kevin Gausman face off anymore and see which of them can, I don't know what to call it. I want to say twerk, but that's not the right word. But both of them, when they're out, they just fidget nonstop until the pitch is thrown. And it was hard to watch. I will be honest. If I don't have to watch that ever again, I'll be happy. I think Teoscar Hernandez is in for a typical Teo season. 30 home runs, you know, some 170 runs and RBIs combined, maybe even pushing, you know, 180, 190. It's tough because he's batting seventh. Maybe he bats sixth against lefties. There's not a lot of upside in the lineup for him, even if he's, you know, the best hitter on the team over a certain period of time. It's just not a lineup that Dave Roberts messes with. So he's always going to be a little bit limited there, but I think you can count on a 260 to 270 average. You can count on 30-ish home runs. You can count on run production. And I'll take that. I'll take that all day.
Yep, I'm with you. Like, I'm all in still on Teoscar. Again, it's almost just like, you know, you can write a stat line. And there's a lot to be said about these Dodgers, and the prices are appropriate for them. This is one that I'm excited about because Andy Páez, I liked a lot last year. And there was a time it felt like he was, like, people are crying for him to get demoted or something, but Dave Roberts just stuck with him. He ended up playing 156 games. Maybe the injuries helped him stay up there, but yep. It's like, to me, it's the quietest, unhappy people, 272, 27 homers, 14 steal season on the face of the planet. Cause you look at the stat line, like, yeah, that was pretty good for, you know, one of your first seasons in the bigs. And his ADP reflects it though. He's going five picks after Teoscar, about 140, 141. So now you got to pay for him. That's the thing. So, like, do we, again, sound like Teoscar, do we buy into what Páez does? Because I think I believe in the skills, but it was close to a demotion if injuries didn't happen. So where are we at on Andy Páez?
Yeah, I really like Andy Páez a lot. And you, I remember, were very excited to ask about Páez last season. You know, Páez was someone that you were in on pretty early. Páez, to me, is actually even safer from a playing time perspective than Teoscar Hernandez, because Páez is just about the only player that the Dodgers have that they feel comfortable with in center field. There are other players that will play there. You know, Tommy Edman will get some playing time in center. There's talk of Hyesung Kim getting work in center. Kike Hernandez will play in center a little bit, but like, there's no player that Dave Roberts feels comfortable with out there. And I mean, proof of that, we subbed him in the World Series to go play center field, even though he couldn't lay off a slider in the dirt to save his life, but we needed his glove and his arm out there in center. We have a bunch of corner outfielders on this team. We don't have anyone that can play center. We don't really have prospects either that are chomping at the bit to play in center field either, at least not this season. So it's a situation where Pajes is going to have a leash. I think, you know, there's a little bit of concern from what we saw on the brightest, the biggest stage and the brightest lights that he's got some swing and miss in his profile. But that's not any different than who he was all year last year. And this isn't a James Outman situation where he can't hit pitches that are in the zone. Like Outman's issue wasn't just that he was swinging at bad pitches. It was also that his contact rate wasn't good, period. Andy Pajes makes contact really well. He just needs to stop swinging at pitches that bounce on the dirt that Emmanuel Clase throws 5 feet in front of the plate. So I think Pajes, if it were me, and I was looking at both Pajes and Teoscar Hernandez, I would be drafting Pajes.
Love it. Now that's the kind of stuff I love in these team previews, because that's like my running thing is, yeah, we know a lot of the players, but there's always like one or two little nuggets from people that that's why I have people that actually follow or pay attention to the team. I don't think many would come away with that, but I don't disagree, because Pajes is young. Like he's like, mm-hmm. he could still, there could be another level we don't have not seen yet, especially if he goes Pedro Serrano and learns how to hit a curveball.
It'll be, or just lay off it. Just lay off it. It's fine.
Just don't swing. Good point. Just don't swing at it.
Yeah.
It's easy.
The thing with Pajes and Teoscar, and I'm only comparing them. Well, there's a lot of reasons to compare them, but them going so close to each other in ADP is a great reason to compare them. Pajes has a little bit more risk in his profile for sure, right? There is the chance that he doesn't have another season like the one he just had. I mean, we're at about a season and a half now of this amount of, we know the power. We know the power is real. We know the contact skills are real. And so I think, and between Pajes and Hernandez, Pajes's job is safer. Like, it sounds weird to say, because that shouldn't be the case if you look at it on paper, contract status, you know, tenure in the league, options, right? Things that like just the roster management. But we can put other dudes in left field. We can, there's not anyone on the roster that we really can put in center without, you know, Dave Roberts and Andrew Friedman and the rest of the brain trust being like, we got to do something. We got to get someone else in here. We don't really have anyone in the building right now that I think, you know, we could truly bench Pajes for an extended period of time. So as it stands right now, I think Pajes' risk profile is similar to Teo's overall, and I think the upside's higher.
I immediately go look at rosters to see what center fielders can they trade for immediately and give $45 billion to. I'm just kidding. all right, I bunched these last two together for second base because Tommy Edman's out to start the season from his ankle surgery. His ADP is around 323, 24 right now. They already said his son Kim is going to start the season at second base, more likely than not. In that scenario, he's around 357. Like you mentioned, Kim might play some outfield. He's going to be super utility in theory. I made the joke that, well, yeah, they said they were going to play him last year at different times, and it never happened. I'm just going to put these two together. Like, his son Kim, Tommy Edman, do we have fantasy appeal here at all?
Can I start by asking, what is the fantasy appeal to Tommy Edman? Because from what I'm looking at, he hasn't had any since coming to the Dodgers. He doesn't run anymore. Numerous ankle injuries is a good reason for that. He was never really a power hitter. He plays second base. Is that it? Is that the extent of the Edman appeal?
I think it was before this year, at least. He was second base outfield eligible. There used to be, and where you're drafting him at, it was like mediocre pop before all the ankles injuries. He like, you could get like a 10-10 guy, 15-15 guy back in the day that would hit for average. Now, to your point, that has slowly just disappeared due to all these injuries. And like, it's just, he's just a shell of himself out there from what we've seen recently. So I have zero desire. Like, when I'm in a draft room, I don't even look at his name. I scroll quickly past it. But there are people, obviously, that still are intrigued by him. So I get what you're going with that.
I think he's a great real life player that does a lot of the little things and, you know, is great in the clubhouse, very versatile. I think there's a lot of reasons why he's not any better from a fantasy perspective than someone like Kike Hernandez, for example. And so I just don't, for me personally, I don't see any reason to roster Tommy Edman because there's no real upside there. And he's already hurt. So there's no real like, well, I just need someone to play second base, you know, because I couldn't find anyone else. That's just not the case. So that I was like, when am I missing on Edman? I just needed to know if if there's any real appeal. And at least in this room, there's not. Hyesung Kim. Hyesung Kim should play more. He should play more. He should have played more last year. That's coming from a guy who does not play baseball to major league level, has never coached baseball to major league level. And from everything that you would read and hear from the team, his at-bats just were not quality at-bats. He hit for a good average. Like, it obviously started off his career very hot. But it just felt like there was no real confidence in the way that he carried himself in the batter's box for Dave Roberts to feel like he could consistently put him out there. I don't know if that's changed. In the playoffs, he barely got any playing time and barely hit. It was kind of like Justin Dean, but for the infield. And I don't know. We won't know until spring training if that has changed at all. However, if that has changed, if he can have quality at bats that at least allows Dave Roberts to feel like I can put him out there and not be doing a disservice to the team. If he can get regular playing time, if he can win that second base job, and there's one other person I want to talk about as a possible option at second base. But if he can get playing time, if he can show that he is the hitter that we think he can be, there is a 5% chance that you're getting someone who is going to be like Xavier Edwards or Malik Smith from back in the day of hitting 280, stealing 40 bases and scoring 70 runs. Mm-hmm. And in fantasy baseball, that is super valuable. And so I understand the like last round flyer on a guy who maybe will win the job out of camp and maybe could have a season like that. So if you want to take that $1 scratcher and hope for the best, by all means, I actually probably will be doing that in 15 team leagues, because where else are you going to find 40 yeah. stolen base upside that late in the draft? But there's like a 95% chance he's off of your roster by April 15th.
Yeah, when Tommy comes back. Well, then let's just get to it. You teased it. Who's the other second base option you're thinking about?
The other guy that might get playing time there is Alex Freeland. Yes. And Alex Freeland also might play at third. He might platoon with Max Muncy. Miguel Rojas might play some at second base. Like Enrique Hernandez might play some at second base. But if there's someone else who might win the job, it would be Alex Freeland. Freeland has been a top prospect in the Dodgers organization, not necessarily a top prospect in all of baseball. But he is someone that really broke out in 2024 and has shown the ability to hit for a decent enough amount of power and be a good enough overall player to be, I think people see him as an everyday player if he were in any other team in baseball and had that opportunity. Now, what we saw on the field last year was not good. He did not hit well in the opportunities he got. He also did not get very many consistent opportunities. I'll give him that it was probably a very difficult experience constantly going back and forth from AAA to the majors, you know, being on the bench, being in the lineup. I'm sure that kind of stuff takes a toll. I don't think he's going to win the job, but if he does, there is a 5% chance you're getting like Jorge Polanco or Gleyber Torres. So that makes him much less interesting to me because it's not as exciting to take a flyer on someone who could maybe hit 20 home runs, maybe drive in 70 runs, maybe hit 260. You know, that's just not as fantasy viable as what Hyesung Kim could be. But realistically, there's a chance that Alex Freeland is the starting second baseman for the Dodgers and has that sort of, you know, current day Gleyber Torres upside.
The last, I guess, position player, that I'm curious about, just because I think the skills are insane, but I don't know where the playing time really sticks, is what are we doing with Dalton Rushing?
I thought we'd be talking about him. I put him on my notes. I wasn't sure if we'd talk about Dalton Rushing, but I completely agree. I have no idea where he's going to play. I don't think he's going to play regularly. He's not, you know, he's going to back up Will Smith, so there's not going to be a lot of playing time there behind the plate. There's been talk of him getting some playing time at first base. Him being the backup first baseman when Freddie Freeman has a day off. So, okay, we're up to 1.5 days a week of being a starter. He's played outfield in the minors. So there's another half day where he gives Teo a day off or something like that. It doesn't feel like there's really a path for him getting regular playing time. And again, short of us getting another catcher and moving Will Smith to third, that doesn't feel likely. It just, I don't, you got to do a lot of like tarot card reading to find 100 games for Dalton rushing next year. He's got the pedigree. If he gets the playing time, he's going to be very interesting, specifically because he has catcher eligibility. But I think, you know, again, we're talking about squint really hard, you know, do one of those things where you're looking at like the laser grid and it's like the Ocean's 17 and they're doing the stupid laser grid stuff. And you're like, oh yeah, maybe there's that world where Dalton rushing starts in left field. I guess, I don't know. It just doesn't, I don't see it. It's the pedigree's there.
It feels like he's got to go the Miguel Vargas, Michael Bush route and find a new team, unfortunately, but that's what happens when you buy enough players, the prospects.
The guy blocking him is a homegrown catcher. What are we doing?
Well, that one, but I'm talking about like the Bush, Vargas of the world.
Oh, fair. That's fair.
Like I'm referring to most of the prospects that are become to the point where they either need a player go on. They usually go on because the spots are filled.
There's no room. Yeah, that's.
I still believe in James Outman. Weirdly enough, I think there's a guy there that's at least half decent. He might not be great, but he's half decent. We'll never know. All right, let's head to the mound here just real quickly. I kind of hinted at it earlier. We talked about it offline. Shohei Ohtani's also pitching. That's why he's the unicorn. Any thoughts on him? Because I think in fantasy we pretty much just put him at hitter. That's just the reality of the situation. There are formats where you put him at a pitcher, or there's formats where you have to pick when you draft them which one he's at. So where are you at on, I guess, Shohei Ohtani on the pitching side of things?
So I was planning on talking about Ohtani with the other four pitchers in our rotation that are extremely like Ohtani in fantasy value. So I will just say that Ohtani is the only place where you're really drafting Ohtani as a pitcher only is if you're playing on Yahoo. Cause I think that's the only fantasy outlet that does that. Unless you have like a custom Fantrax league where you've set it up that way. If you're drafting Ohtani in an NFBC format where he's both a hitter and a pitcher, you're not using him as a pitcher ever. So I'll just say on Yahoo, he's going about 95th overall. He's the 25th starting pitcher off the board. I think that is incredible value. I think you are getting a guy who, when he's on the mound, is a top 10 starting pitcher in baseball. I do think he's going to pitch fewer innings than, you know, some of the starting pitchers ahead of him. And that is why, you know, you're not you're drafting him as low as you are at 100th overall. But I think this is someone that by the end of the season, playing time notwithstanding, is going to be seen as a top, I'll hedge, top 15 starting pitcher in baseball. We've seen how great he can be, and now we're getting him for a fully healthy season. He's not throwing in the World Baseball Classic. So you don't have to worry about that. He didn't have a big workload last year, obviously coming back from a Tommy John. So you don't have to worry about that. I think we're going to get a full season, whatever a full season of being a Dodger pitcher means. But we're going to get a full season of
great way to put it. Now. Yes.
which probably means like 130 innings. Right. Yeah. But I think it's going to be a dominant 130 innings that I would rather have that and supplement than to draft someone who's going to be worse for more innings, just because I'm going to get more innings out of them.
Agreed. I think he's phenomenal. If it's a league where like you said, where you have to pick a pitcher or hit, like when you draft him, then yeah, you're getting a great price tag on him right now. So zero qualms on that at all. Let's go to your quote unquote ace, if we're not talking about Ohtani anymore. That's Yoshinobu Yamamoto, the new prize possession last season, or actually it's two seasons now, 2024. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But last season we saw a full season, 30 starts, 173 innings, great ratios, great strikeouts. And then in the postseason went to a whole nother, he tried to do his best Bumgarner impression. It was pretty good stuff there. ADP's around 27. He's like one of the names in the conversation of who's the SP4. Is it Sanchez or Yamamoto or Gilbert or all that kind of discussions we've been having for a few months? Where are you at on Yamamoto? Because I'll be honest, I love the skills. Love them. I am slightly concerned due to the postseason workload onto the regular season workload, because I've witnessed this firsthand with, like, that's why I made the Bumgarner joke, because he did that essentially. Where are you at on Yamamoto?
Yeah, first of all, I think Randy Johnson is a more apt comparison. Let's talk about 01 Randy Johnson here. Part of me wishes that Yamamoto got that got to pitch in game three and got the win in that just so he could have the win in all four games. For this year, for fantasy, I'll be perfectly honest. Me as a drafter, as a player of fantasy baseball, really could not care less where he is in that fourth through, you know, whatever range, because I'm not drafting any of those starting pitchers. I don't, if I'm not getting Scooble, Skeens, or Crochet, I am skipping the Yamamoto, Sanchez, Gilbert, Brown, Chris Sale. I'm just going through the NFBC. I'm not drafting any of these starting pitchers because these guys are closer to the tier below them than they are to the tier above them. And I don't really want to pay the price for someone who isn't going to, I don't see the path to them being a first round pick next year. And so there, I'm just not going to pay that price. Now, if you are the type of drafter that you want to draft one of those guys, I think I'd have Yamamoto behind Sanchez. I think for me, I'd be drafting Yamamoto more around the Logan Gilbert, Hunter Brown range of like late round three, more in pick 40. I think he's not the pitcher he was last year, but he is a fantastic pitcher. And you're going to get, I mean, he's going to be the most steady and sturdy starting pitcher the Dodgers have, assuming we didn't, you know, run him into the ground in October, which is possible. So I'm not drafting Yamamoto, but I'm also not drafting any of the other guys around him.
And that's fair. That's a stance a lot of people do take as well. Like this, not get the elite, you go to the next bubble down and see where it goes. And the thing that also scares me with the Dodgers, and we'll talk about it with a handful of these pitchers, kind of what you hinted at with Otani, there's a lot of depth where phantom ILs will come into play to manage innings, because I think we all know they're going to have a postseason run where they will need these guys. So it's kind of one of those factors as well.
Yeah. And the one thing the last thing I'll say on this is I miss the days when being a top five starting pitcher meant I could pencil you in for 180 plus innings, and even more so the days when I could pencil you in for 200 innings. Yeah. We have projected, and I'm sure other outlets have projected Yamamoto at, you know, much closer to like 150, 160 innings. And you're talking about there's going to be 50 starting pitchers at a minimum who are going to throw more innings than that. I just can't see myself drafting anyone that high with that much of a volume concern.
Well, one pitcher that won't pitch more innings than that is Tyler Glass now, because he just doesn't know how to in his entire career. It's the old adage that when he's pitching, electric, one of the best pitchers in baseball. It's just the when he's pitching portion. Glass now, ADP is 122. Obviously had the injury last year, but did not have surgery. So that's also a thing to keep in the back of our minds. I've just ignored Tyler Glass now, but there's the part of me that goes, yeah, take whatever innings you get because they're going to be great, and then move on. What are your thoughts on Tyler Glass now?
Yeah, so this is Glasnow, Otani, and then I'll just say Snell and Sheehan are the four pitchers that I'm talking about, where how much you like them. And I'm talking to you, the listener, and your approach to how you want to manage your fantasy team. That is how you're going to like these Dodger pitchers. If you don't want to worry about the IL stints and managing depth at starting pitcher, and you're like, just give me the best pitchers, regardless of how much volume they give me, you're going to love these Dodger pitchers. And if you don't want to have that headache and you want people that you know you can rely on and that will be out there for the 26 weeks that, you know, as much as any starting pitcher can be, right? We all know the risk inherent. Then you're not going to like these pitchers. Glasnow is being drafted. I think he's the 30th or 31st starting pitcher off the board. On a per inning basis, we have him probably closer to like a top 20, between 15 and 20 starting pitcher. The same is true for Blake Snell. The same is true to a lesser extent for Emmett Sheehan. Just what they can do on a per inning basis is going to outmatch what their draft cost is. But you're not getting the volume that you're going to get from other pitchers in that same range. And so that's a question that only you, the listener, can answer for yourself on what you want in your team. And that also can change depending on what, you know, each draft. You might have a team where you get, Scooble or Skeens in the first round, and you go, okay, cool, I can take a chance on Tyler Glasnow, on Blake Snell. You might have drafted Yamamoto, or you might draft someone else, Chris Sale, and say, I can't take that risk with Glasnow and Snell later. So it's going to be a case by case basis. But if you find yourself in that position when Glasnow's up on the board around the time he's about to be drafted and you feel like I can manage this, I think it's a no brainer to take Tyler Glasnow at 125th overall.
I guess what I'll do, so we don't have to talk about all three of them, because the similarities, as you mentioned, because it is, it's true. They're like, Snell's already started the season on the IL for crying out loud. Like, this is what we're going to do with these guys. I will ask you this much, because A, Sheehan's getting a lot of hype behind him right now. People mm-hmm. are like really saying this is the dude. I think we agree the skills are great, but again, it's a typical Dodgers thing, and it's not even a slight anymore. It's they're going to manage these innings, or someone's going to get hurt, or whatever.
Yep.
Out of those three, Glasnow, Snell, Sheehan, just to keep it there. If you had to pick one, which one would you pick?
At their ADP or just straight up?
Just in general. Which one do you feel has the best season? Like, you would be willing to take a chance on Snell?
Okay. Snell. But Snell's going so much higher. So Snell, yeah. if it's just in a vacuum, absolutely Snell. Because Snell is the only one of the three that should have any odds of winning Cy Young on any sports book. You know, the other two should not. There's no world in which people should be thinking they could win a Cy Young Award. Blake Snell, we could be talking about that. Now, Blake Snell actually is my least favorite at cost, because Blake Snell has a little bit more of a risk profile than Glasnow, only because there's multiple types of risk with Blake Snell. Whereas with Glasnow, it's one risk. We know it's going to happen. We know he's going to get hurt, but it's not going to affect, I don't think, in my, you know, not looking through a crystal ball, but it's not going to affect his performance. Blake Snell has performance risk. He has times where he can't find the strike zone. He has times where he just can't throw any, he can't help himself but to throw very hittable pitches. And that to me makes Snell a little bit less palatable at his cost. But if I'm staring at all three and I'm picking one, I'm picking Snell.
Because of the upside. Let's go to the guy that was your outstanding closer in the postseason. And I was hoping was going to start the season as the closer, but of course the Dodgers had to go spend money there. We'll get to that in a second. Roki Sasaki has to pitch somewhere right now with injuries. Should take Snell's spot to start the season, but eventually Snell comes back and maybe then Glasnow. This could still work out in Sasaki's favor somewhere along the line. If you do like him, his ADP is 234, but I just don't know where he pitches and how he pitches and what takes place. So where are we at on Roki Sasaki in year two with the Dodgers?
Yeah, I unfortunately, Sasaki is not like the other guys I mentioned above, like Sheehan, where there's no question about the skills and it's just a question of playing time. I don't know what Sasaki we're going to get this regular season. And I also don't know that even if we get the Roki that we saw in the playoffs that did not have velocity concerns, that did not have as much of a command issue, that looked ready for the moment in a way that he didn't look at the beginning of the season last year, when it seemed like he seemed a little bit outmatched in terms of just his level of readiness for what pitching in Major League Baseball was like. Even with all that, he's not on the same level, even as Emmett Sheehan, as a pitcher. His repertoire is not very deep. He really only has two pitches that he trusts. His fastball is good, but it relies on velocity to be good. I mean, that sounds dumb. Fastballs do rely on, but in a way more than other pitchers. He doesn't have the same rise. He doesn't have the same swing and miss stuff with his fastball. I just am a little bit more concerned that Sasaki is just bad across the six pitchers that the Dodgers currently have slated in their starting rotation. He's the one that I'm most concerned is just not going to live up to the performance that we would want from a starting pitcher. And so I just don't, you got playing time concerns. I have skills concerns. I don't want to draft Roki Sasaki because I think there's other pitchers that I could draft in that range where I don't have both of those concerns.
No, it's totally fair. Again, another pitcher that I pretty much walked past now once they signed Edwin Diaz. And speaking of Edwin Diaz, one of the top closers in baseball in recent seasons, the Dodgers gave him the money. Some are saying he's the top closer off the board. Right now he's going after Mason Miller, but, you know, to each their own and arguing that one. Edwin's ADP is 35 right now. So you got to pay the premium like you do with most closers in drafts right now. I haven't drafted Edwin Diaz. It's not anything personal. It's just I just haven't paid the price for Edwin Diaz. Where are you at on Edwin Diaz as the new closer for the Dodgers?
I'm very excited. I'm very excited to have Edwin Diaz because when we signed him, my first thought was, like, I didn't think of him any differently than any other closer that we've had since Kenley left. And what I mean by that, obviously, I know Edwin Diaz is a fantastic pitcher, but we've just sort of had a bullpen full of really great relievers over the past few years. And I look back on it and I realize we have not had a guy save 30 games for the Dodgers since Kenley left. Evan Phillips didn't do it. Craig Kimbrell didn't do it. Wow. Tanner Scott obviously didn't do it. Shocker, right? That Craig Kimbrell, of all people, didn't do it. You know, the shell of himself that he was by the time we got him. But Edwin Diaz is a better pitcher, hands down, than anyone we've had in our bullpen since prime Kenley. I mean, even like we had prime Blake Treinen at one point, and I would still take today's Edwin Diaz over any of those guys. I just don't know. There's still a part of me that just doesn't know what the Dodgers do with their bullpen because it's so obvious that Edwin Diaz should get every save opportunity, which makes it so obvious that Dave Roberts isn't going to do that. And we're not going to get Edwin Diaz out there for every single save opportunity. So I think if you are someone who drafts closers early, you should draft Edwin Diaz because he is a great pitcher and there's no reason not to believe that he'll have all the saves that he should have in a Dodger team that has always been at the top of the league in save opportunities. There's just something in me as a Dodger fan that's just like, I just don't know that we're going to follow through on it for some reason.
Well, the bright side is you're going to win 110 games. You can't save them all. So, and you guys score too many runs for save opportunities.
But, yeah, you know, it's funny. I thought that too. That I did. That was the first thing I looked at in preparing for this
podcast. But it wasn't true, was it?
No, here's the thing is we finished in the top five in saves, team saves over the past two seasons. We just spread them out. And now we finally have a reason not to. So I think Edwin Diaz is going to get the lion's share of the saves. I think he'll easily eclipse 30 saves. He'll probably get 40. I already don't draft closers early. So I think I already had sort of that hesitation with it as a fantasy player. And as a Dodger fan, there's just because it's been so many years since we've done this, of having this set guy, there's just something in my gut that's telling me somehow, some way, Edwin Diaz is going to end the season with like 24 saves.
Yep, totally. That would be wild if that took place. Like, Dodgers Twitter would burn to the ground. It'd be great. Any other pitchers that are worth discussing with the Dodgers? Because we'll need them probably throughout the season.
If there's a world where Edwin Diaz does end up with fewer than 30 saves, it's probably a world where Tanner Scott remembered how to pitch. And being a left-handed reliever gave Dave Roberts a reason to use him in other situations. It's also the situation where, like, if Edwin Diaz were to get hurt or anything like that, Scott has that leash, I think, right now, that he's going to have to pitch poorly again. Like, we're kind of at square zero with him, in my opinion. And so I think Tanner Scott is someone that if you're the type of manager that wants to just spend your last two or three picks in your draft on a couple of guys who like have a path to 30 saves, Tanner Scott technically has a path to 30 saves and has been elite in the past. So there's worse options. I also wouldn't draft the guy behind Edwin Diaz just because the odds of anyone else getting saves are so low. But I've seen Tanner Scott get drafted. I think he's being drafted in like 80% of all NFBC drafts right now, give or take. So there are people out there who are taking that shot. I'm totally fine with that. I think he's clearly the next man up. And again, if you want to play the Dave Roberts could throw him out there for even 10 saves just by virtue of the fact that they're facing lefties, you could. I think there's a world where Tanner Scott gets 10 saves next year, even without being a particularly great pitcher. So there's that.
There's definitely a world where Dave Roberts would do that. That's for sure. he's such a funny manager.
I was just going to say with starting pitchers, I don't know if there's anyone else in the bullpen you wanted to talk about, with starting pitchers, someone that I streamed quite a bit last year, and I think is certainly streamable in just about any league type is Ben Kasperius. He is the next man up in the rotation. If anything were to happen, he also gets used as a long reliever, even when he's not in the rotation. So there have been times where just the raw amount of innings he pitched for the Dodgers made him viable. So he was someone that I streamed a few times last year. And then both Gavin Stone and River Ryan are pitchers that I think could get opportunities this year and have the stuff to capitalize on those opportunities. River Ryan is coming back from Tommy John surgery, so I don't know exactly when he's going to be available and what he's going to look like when he gets opportunities. But both Stone and Ryan have shown in the past enough skills that if they get, you know, called up and put into the rotation, and hey, for the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it is, they're going to be in the rotation. I'm going to keep a very close eye on them, and I might stream them as well.
No, I like that because, yeah, we ended up using a little bit of all of them at times last year. And I'd love to see Kasperius get some more run in that rotation.
He'll get innings. I just don't know when they're going to come. And
it'll be sporadic, sporadic. But yeah. What prospects, if any, should we be looking forward to this year? It feels like they're a bit ways still.
We've talked about all of them, and they're not, when I say, we've talked about them all, they're obviously guys that aren't just in the farm system, but Dalton Rushing, if you want to consider Hassan Kamara, Alex Freeland still to be a prospect, but there's no one. If you look at like the Dodgers prospect list, DePaula and Hope are still too far out. I really just don't see any of the guys that are touted as high ceiling prospects anywhere close to the majors this year. And all of the people that have a path to playing time are the ones that we've already discussed, who are already sort of in the mix, and just whether they get playing time or not is going to be up to the injury gods.
All righty. Last question I have for you then. What are your expectations for the 2026 season?
What are your expectations for the Dodgers for the 2026 season?
I asked you, I'm the host.
We're going to win it all. Obviously the expectation is to win it all. The expectation is to win a third in a row in the last 6 years. Yeah. There's anything short of that is obviously going to be seen as a failure by the organization, other than, again, injury or some other situation where you can say, hey, October just wasn't our month. But I will say there, one other interesting thing about the Dodgers is this is an old team. And it doesn't feel that way necessarily because we keep getting new players and we keep adding, exciting young talent. But like the core of the team is really old. And so my other expectation for the Dodgers this year is that we start to see what the next team looks like, even if it's not necessarily like on the field. But like Dalton Rushing needs to get some run. Because if we need to know if he's someone that we can put in the outfield or at first base long term, is Alex Freeland someone that can be on the team long term? Is Hyesung Kim someone that, like, I want to see River Ryan pitch. I want to see Sheehan pitch. Obviously Sheehan's in the rotation, but like these guys are gonna need to get run because I'm not gonna go full two timelines BS like the Warriors. That's obviously a joke, but I do think for the Dodgers to have a successful year, winning a World Series is a given as far as a expectation. That there's no question about that. I think we also need to figure out what do we really have in our organization, and what do we need to buy next year after we get a CBA in place.
You said it. What do we need to buy? With our
money? What do we need to invest in? Let's make it seem nicer. Yes. Where do we need to invest our resources?
Well, to be fair, Shohei was a great investment. He's already made your money back, it sounds like. Good Lord.
By far.
Yeah. But no, it's a great point. Like we joke because this team like literally should. Like I made the joke after one of the recent signings. I said, why doesn't one of the WBC teams just be the Dodgers taking on part of the world? Like it's that loaded.
It'd be
like,
fun.
In reality. Like it'd be interesting. Yeah, like on paper, they should win the whole thing. But baseball's baseball. Like last year, Jays had them on the ropes. The Phillies had them on the ropes. Like baseball's baseball. Anything can happen. And I think the age part to it is a factor. You said it. And like, we kind of joked with Rushing, and I made the Vargas and Bush comments, like, they'd be just fine on the Dodgers now too. Like, they'd fit in just fine. But at the time, obviously there's no room for him at the end. And Rushing's like, eventually these young players have to make room. Like, Paul has got to make his. That worked. Yep. But it's like, to your point, is we joke about it because we have to find the hole somewhere in this team. And that's it. It's like, they got to find a way to get these young players in there. Or you got to keep signing guys, which they can do. But eventually you're not going to hit gold every time. Like, that's going to turn into a mess. And then you're going to be stuck with, you know, $1 billion of what did we just do? And that's a problem. So, yeah, we'll see.
Definitely agree.
All right, Miles, we'll wrap it up there. Hopefully when we talk this time next year, it's not three in a row, but time will tell on that one. Why don't you remind everybody what's going on at Pitcher List before we head out of here?
Yeah, keep a close eye on Pitcher List moving forward. We're going to have a ton of great content coming out in regards to preparing, you know, everything that I just mentioned and a lot of the analysis that I just provided. A lot of it came from learning from those around me here at Pitcher List. A lot of the great work that Kyle Bland has put into our PLV projections. A lot of the great work that folks like Scott Chu, Nate Schwartz, Rick Graham, Nick Pollock himself, obviously, have put into putting out really great analysis on our website. And so whether you are the type of fantasy manager that wants to have a draft assistant and a product and projections and an auction calculator in front of you to help you prepare, or if you want to just absorb information and have it in your brain when you go into the draft, Pitcher List is going to have you covered both in season both in draft season and throughout the regular season. So as Brian, as Bubba mentioned at the beginning of this thing, it's a place where we are always striving to improve, always striving to provide as much valuable information and analysis as possible. So I hope that for you all listening, you guys can find a space for Pitcher List in your, I'm sure, vast bookmarks of baseball analysis and fantasy baseball research and all that.
Yep, go check them out if you aren't already for some strange reason. But Miles, thanks for joining me as always. Hopefully we'll get to catch up in Arizona this year if possible, if not down the road. But thanks as always, and go Giants. Everybody, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 837, your 2026 Los Angeles Dodgers preview. Catch y'all next time.